fighting soldiers from the sky. Fearless men who jump and die. Men who mean just what they say. The brave men of the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Trained to live off nature's land, trained in combat hand to hand. Men who fight by night and day, courage take from the Green Beret. Silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men will test today, but only 3 win the Green Beret. Back at home, a young wife waits. Her Green Beret has met his fate. He has died for those oppressed, leaving her this last request. Put silver wings on my son's chest. Make him one of America's best. He'll be a man they'll test one day. Have him win the Green Beret.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains of the Missouri Ozarks on Wednesday. It is Wednesday, the 21st day of February, year of our Lord, 2024. Welcome to John Moore Show. Live broadcast begin at Republic Broadcasting, coming out of beautiful Round Rock, Texas, Monday through Friday, with my show, The John Moore Show. And I'm proud to say we do begin with a Pledge of Allegiance. Hopefully soon we'll have Deputy Hendricks back. He has had a very severe health issue going on, and we are asking for prayers for Deputy Hendricks to have a complete recovery. In the meantime, everybody stand, face the flag. Gentlemen, remove your hat, right hand over the heart. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Prepper tip of the day, we got some time to expand on this, so we will, is to inspect all your foot gear and get merino wool socks. If you live in areas that don't have severe cold, no colder than, say, 0 or maybe 10 below, merino wool socks are fine. If you're going to spend extended time out in the wilderness where it's really cold, you might want to look at alpaca socks as well. Okay, it looks like Bill Federer may be with us this morning. I hope he is able to join us. Initially, he had a conflict today, but anyway, I'm probably the only radio talk show host that recommends people get a socks. I don't sell socks. You can find merino wool socks at good quality sporting goods stores, Amazon, and so forth. Content, the better. And it looks like we are joined by my friend Bill Federer. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, John. Great to be with you.
Yeah, well, this I thought you might be off for another week, out and about doing different things, but you're good to have you with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Bill Federer and I have known each other since 1998. Get it right, John. And he's the author of about 24 books and more on the way because he's a prolific writer. The book that we're still working on, we only spent an hour with a couple of weeks ago, is the following book. Listen carefully. What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran. The subtitle is A History of Islam and the United States. And I assume, is that available at your website, Bill?
Right. AmericanMinute.com.
AmericanMinute.com, which is heard all over the country. Well, Bill, let's begin from the beginning. What was the impetus to... commenced writing this book, sir?
Well, when President Obama, well, actually prior to that, when you had congressman from Minnesota swearing in as a congressman on a Quran.
Right. Not just any Quran, the one that got Thomas Jefferson's library.
Right. And the my limited knowledge of history knew that Thomas Jefferson was the president during the Barbary Pirate Wars. And the day after his inauguration, he got a demand from the Pasha of Tripoli for $250,000 extortion tribute payment. And he's like, what did we do wrong? We're a brand new country. How could we have offended you yet? Why are you attacking our ships? And and so Jefferson had a Quran to see what's in this book that makes them want to hate us.
Right.
And now later he makes quite a few statements praising the Bible, saying it's the best book of ethics in the world. And he actually put together a New Testament or a book of, he called it a book of ethics for the use by, for the Indians, Lewis and Clark going out west. We've had, you know, several decades of Indian wars. And he thought if you gave the Indians the entire Bible, they'd make it to the book of Joshua and David and continue their warfare. Well, let's give them the ethics of turn the other cheek, forgive the adulterous woman, walk the extra mile, forgive. And he said, I've read all the religions and philosophies, ancient and modern, and I can find none so pure as that of Jesus. And so the fact that he would say, I've read all of them, means that he had a Quran. And sure enough, around 1765 is when he had purchased this two-volume translation of the Quran. And so in there, it talks about subduing the infidel. Now, when Keith Ellison swore in upon a Quran, and the media was like overjoyed. And I was actually talking someplace, and somebody came up and said, well, didn't Jefferson swear in on a Quran?
Oh, no.
Okay. you know, whatever they're saying up there, by the time it reaches the street, it's been totally shifted. And so I decided I would put together a little booklet, and it kept growing and growing. And, of course, Jefferson was an ambassador to France right, you know, when the Revolutionary War and then at the beginning of the country. And he met with the ambassador from Tripoli, and he asked him why they were attacking our ships. And he said that it is written in the Quran that every nation that should not acknowledge Islam were sinners, and it was their right and duty to make war upon them and make them slaves. And any Muslimman who should be slain in battle was sure to go to paradise. And so Jefferson, there's quite a list of correspondents. They had captured some American ships. They kept our crews in the dungeons of Algiers. And Jefferson was corresponding with a Catholic order called the Trinitarians and also Maruthians. And they had centuries of collecting alms and donations at church services and going under a white flag to North Africa to ransom back your friend or family that was captured from a Greek island or a Italian coast or, you know, the coast of France or Spain. And so he's corresponding with this. And they said, yes, we're willing to help you, but if word gets out that we're interceding for a nation, then the price is going to go up astronomically. And you know, and then Jefferson writes another letter, says those poor guys in prison, they're probably wondering why I'm not writing letters to them. But I don't want the Muslims to think they're more valuable than they are, since this is the first time that we're going to be ransoming soldiers, and whatever price we set is we're going to be stuck with in the future. So I'm not, you know, corresponding with them. And then lo and behold, one of the prisoners decided that he wanted to convert to Islam, And then he got out of prison. And then he got some women. And it was all good for him. And then later, when they were able to negotiate the release of these prisoners, they said that that one that had converted decided that he wanted to go back to America. And at the meeting, the Pasha was so upset at him for wanting to go back that he put him in chains and drug him away, and he was never seen again. So, you know,
surprise.
But if you want to leave, it's the death penalty. And then, by the way, that Maruthians, many are familiar with Miguel de Cervantes. He wrote Man of La Mancha, Don Quixote. Well, he fought in the Battle of Lepanto in 1571. It was the biggest battle on the Mediterranean. 230 Muslim ships powered by 15,000 Christian slaves under the deck. And then the King of Spain, Charles V, he had an illegitimate son named Don John of Austria. And so Don John is put in charge of the Holy League. And so he gets the Spanish and the Austrians and the Venetians and all these different European powers to get their navy together. And they muster up about 200 ships. And the famous battle, the wind is against the Holy League, and it's off Lepanto, Greece. And the captains of these ships, who were experienced sailors, they're like, we're sitting ducks in the water. We don't have any maneuverability because the wind's against us. And then, of course, the wind was the backs of the Muslim ships. And they said, we can fight another day. Let's just, call it off. And young Don John of Austria says, no, we're here to fight. He gets them on deck and they pray. And while they're praying, the wind changes 180 degrees. And the Muslim sails go limp.
Right.
And Holy League sails fill up. And the Holy League charges in, crashes into them. They had cannons on their ships, but they were like mounted on the front, and there was no left right type of maneuverability. They were just sort of stationary.
Right.
But the one admiral had an idea, and saw off the very very front of the boat so the cannon could tilt down and shoot the hull of the Muslim ships in close combat. Because they were mounted as to go in an arc, and then go down. But if you're in really close contact, you're going to go over the ship. And so they sawed off the front of their boats. And so they would, get really close to the Muslims and they could tilt the whole cannon down and shoot the hull of it and sink it. And so they sank 200 of the 230 Muslim ships. And they freed up about 15,000 Christian slaves who were under the deck. And G.K. Chesterton wrote a famous poem of Lepanto, and the Muslim ships that survived, crippled, go back to Constantinople, and the Holy League, rather than follow up on their victory, the different powers began to bicker with each other, and so they decided to call it off and go back to Europe, and how much we wish they could have gone around the rest of the Mediterranean and freed up all these cities. But Miguel de Cervantes was in that battle, and then he was in a battle afterwards, and he was injured in his hand permanently, and he was captured, and he was made a slave in North Africa for several years. And then he's ransomed back by that Trinitarian order. And then he writes Miguel de Cervantes, Man of La Mancha. And in the first couple of chapters of Man of La Mancha, it has the story of somebody that's a slave in North Africa. And so it's one of these literary techniques of using personal experience so we can read into his stories of this novel character and figure that he must have experienced some of these things because he can write about it in such detail. And so these Muslim ships would capture European vessels, and so the European powers would pay an annual tribute. Italy, Spain, France, Norway, Britain would pay annual tribute to these Muslim pirates, saying, if we pay you ahead of time, don't rob our ships.
Right.
And so when America broke from England, the Muslims in Morocco said, let me get this straight. You're no longer part of England. He goes, yeah, we're independent. He goes, that means you have to pay your own tribute.
Right.
And so that's when they send that letter to Jefferson. And so President Obama, when he gave a speech, he said, and Morocco was the first country to recognize the independence of America. Like, the Muslim countries are so wonderful. And it's like, yeah, he didn't go on to say it's because they wanted to extort us with tribute payment. And so I saw all these twisting of history to promote a pro-Islam agenda. And that's when I decided to write this book. And it ended up becoming a bestseller. And I've spoken all across the country on it. But that was the impetus, was seeing Keith Ellison swear on a Quran. It was Jefferson's Quran that he had purchased. Jefferson fought the Barbary pirates, yet they were saying, this is wonderful that Jefferson owned a Quran. He must have valued it as a book of, you know, whatever. And then when Obama was saying Morocco was the first country to recognize ours, isn't Islam wonderful? And it's like, well, they were pirates and they wanted to rob us. So that was the impetus, and I can get into the book. I track it through history, starting with Muhammad all the way up to the present.
All right. And here we are 2.5 centuries later, and we have Muslims attacking merchant ships and the U.S. Navy in the Red Sea, don't we, sir?
Right. So as we speak, the Houthi, who are backed by the Shiites in Iran, are firing and hitting. I read just this morning that they hit a ship from America with aid for Yemen, and they hit it with a missile. And of course, the missiles are supplied by Iran.
Right.
And so and I wrote a whole history on the Houthi and Yemen, and you know, it's quite a fascinating history. You have Abraham had Sarah and then Isaac and then of course Hagar and Ishmael, but then after Sarah died, Abraham married Keturah and have had a number of sons, Midian, but one of them was Sheba. And then it says that Abraham gave them gifts and sent them away so that they wouldn't be competing with the chosen son Isaac. And so they migrated into the Arabian Peninsula. Midian is where it's in more or less Saudi Arabia, but that's where Moses ran away to when he fled Egypt, and he had Jethro there. But then Sheba went down into Arabia, and he went down to the furthest west and south area, and today that's Yemen, but it used to be called Sheba.
Right.
And they grew trees that the bark had sap, and they would use that to make frankincense incense. So all throughout the Bible, we talk about incense from the desert, incense that came from Sheba. And amazingly, they built a 2,000-foot dam, 50 feet high.
Really?
That was architecturally sound as the pyramids, and it lasted for like from 1000 BC, maybe even Abraham's day, but it, you know, they have hard trouble dating it. Why? Because it fell apart. But anyway, it lasted over 1,000 years, and so they have what's called wadis, W-A-D-I, and it's a dry riverbed. And every now and then, there'll be a monsoon, and it'll pour down rain, and it'll run down these wadis, and it'll fill up. Well, normally it just runs off the ocean, but it's damn hot.
We have our first break, Bill. Call number 512-248-8252. We'll be right back.
C standing 6'4", weighing 245 pounds of crime-fighting, political science-analyzing brawn, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Patrick Slattery.
So, Mike, get off this anti-cicada agenda.
I'm a born-again traditional Christian, and my favorite possessions are right here on my nightstand. That would be the King James Bible and my .357 revolver.
I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than Jews.
Cool it with the anti-Semitic remarks, right?
Just because you steal an election and terminate the republic doesn't mean you terminate the people in the republic, because we're still here.
I'm not taking the vaccine. F*** you, Bill Gates.
There was a way forward still on January 6th. What needed to be done is to object to every single state.
The COVID-19 virus was the setup. The vaccine could very well be the bioweapon.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show. Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
Dear Liberty Man, my aches and pains are making it hard for me to sleep at night. What's a girl to do? Sign, Sleepless in St. Louis.
Dear Sleepless, I recommend the Energy Cleaner. The Energy Cleaner transmits a healing electrostatic signal to every cell in your body, flushing out toxins, relieving pain, aiding with sleep. The Energy Cleaner is sold exclusively at my website, thelibertyman.com. And Sleepless, there is a bonus. Signed, The Liberty Man.
Thanks to the Energy Cleaner and The Liberty Man, I'm sleepless no more. There he is now. Hold on, Sandman. Thank you, Liberty Man.
I wish I was in the land of cotton wool, and there I'm not forgot to look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. In Dixie's land where I was born in early on one frosty morning, look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Ladies and gentlemen, my website is thelibertyman.com. This hour is sponsored by Arkhaven Intentional Christian Community, a wonderful place to raise a family, a great place to retire, a beautiful place to spend time and just live and enjoy life. Details at thelibertyman.com. Visiting with Mr. Bill Federer, his website is AmericanMinute.com. Do I have it right, Bill? AmericanMinute.com?
Correct, correct.
And we're talking about one of his books, one of his 24+ books he's written. The book is titled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. I watch these Muslims take their oath of office when they become a congressman or congresswoman, smiling with their hand on the Quran. And the whole narrative is turned upside down. Clearly, Thomas Jefferson had the Quran as opposition research to understand his avowed enemy, not because he was had any thoughts about Islam being a good thing or something he wanted to be part of, but he needed it to understand his enemy, didn't he, Bill?
Right. So there was a chieftain planning on attacking Muhammad, And Muhammad said, who will rid me of this chieftain? And one of his warriors said, I will, if you permit me to lie. And Muhammad said, go. So he goes to this chieftain and said, I've left Muhammad. He's a heretic. I want to help you, but they're after me. And the chieftain said, okay, tell you what, you can spend the night in my camp. Matter of fact, you can sleep in my tent. You'll have my whole army surrounding you. You'll be safe. In the middle of the night, he tiptoes over and beheads the chieftain,
right.
Grabs his head, runs out of the camp, runs all the way to Muhammad, and gives Muhammad the head. And he says, Allah's prophet, Muhammad's face is shown upon you. And Muhammad said, no, Allah's face is shown upon you. And Muhammad gives him his staff and said, you can lean on this in the day of judgment, because on that day, many people won't have anything to lean upon. So Muhammad gave his approval to lying to your enemy so you can sneak in to their camp. And when they think they're safe, you can murder them. And the term is called taqiyya. Taqiyya, sacred lying, holy deceit. And so it worked its way into the culture where if you feel you are threatened, then it is okay for you to lie. And the definition of threatened is very broad. And so basically you can lie to any infidel without any qualms in conscience. And it's almost like a third world market. You know, one time my son and I went down to Tijuana when we were in San Diego looking at a college. He was thinking of one there. This was years, probably 20 years ago. And so we're going to a market and there is some sunglasses. And he sees the sticker price, like, you know, $30 or something. And he likes them. We go over to the cashier and he starts pulling out his wallet. And I look at him and I look at the cashier and I said, wait a second. It looks like there's a little scratch on the lens. And it looks like, you know, it's bent a little bit, you know, and is that a smudge or is that, you know, a defect? And I started picking apart. And then I said, well, you know, we'll offer you $10 for them. And of course, the person looks really shocked. And then they go back and they say, okay, tell you what, instead of 30, I'll go down to 20. And then, you know, the clerk looks at me and I look at her here. And then they look at my son. I say, oh, and I pick out something else, finally get it down to like $15. And she's happy and we're happy. And I pay the money. And my son's like, whoa, what just happened? You know? And so we went to another market and he picked out a hoodie or something with a, you know, a team logo on it. And he was all thrilled that you could do this type of thing. So a naive American pays the sticker price. When a politician says something, we're like, well, that's what they said. You know, I went into, you know, some department store and had a price. I guess that's the price. If the politician said it, I guess that's what the... And when you negotiate with Muslim countries and they say, oh, we'll do this. And we're like, oh, great, you'll do that. And they like look at themselves like, you believe us? You're not going to like try to negotiate back? They look at us as fools.
Right.
And so right. When they come into the country and they swear upon a Quran and they know the Quran says that it's okay to lie to infidels in order to advance Islam and that they feel their Quran is superior to man-made law. They feel the Quran came directly from Allah and that democracies and republics are man-made law. And so the divine Allah-given law is superior to man-made law. There was a fundamentalist Muslim in London named Joram Kadare. And he started a group called Islam for UK. And he's...
Hold on, Bill. We got a break. The call number is 512-248-8252. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Nahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
So let's fix bayonets. We'll have the advantage of moving down the hill. They gotta be tired, the Revs. They gotta be close to the end if we are. So fix bayonets. Ellis, you take the left wing. I'll take the right. I want a right wheel forward of the whole regiment.
What, you mean charge?
Yes, but here's what we do. We're going to charge swinging down the hill. Just like we pulled back this left side of the regiment, now we're going to swing it down. We swing like a door. We're going to sweep them down the hill just as they come up. Understand? Does everybody understand?
Yes, sir.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. My website is thelibertyman.com. If you have issues with pain, issues with sleep, check out the energy cleaner at my website, thelibertyman.com. They will help you. And keep in mind, I offer a 90-day money-back guarantee on an energy cleaner. The toll-free hour line is 800-592-9543. Visiting with Bill Federer, we're talking about one of his two dozen-plus books, this one entitled What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States, available at, is it The American Minute or just AmericanMinute.com?
Just AmericanMinute.com.
Just AmericanMinute.com. Mm-hmm. Bill, I was visiting a Catholic church a couple of years ago in St. Louis, near the intersection of Olive and 270. I know you know the area. You probably know the church. There was a notice on the front door about a social gathering between Muslims and Catholics, encouraging the Catholic men and women and boys and girls to attend this event. This is going on all over the country. It's not a one-time deal in one Catholic church. What are your thoughts about that, if any, sir?
Yeah, it is a offensive tactic of spreading Islam. Now, there are two sets of verses in the Quran based on the two cities Muhammad lived in. In Mecca, Muhammad was a religious leader. In Medina, he becomes a political and a military leader. So Muhammad's born in 570 AD. Around 610 AD is when he begins his faith. And then he is in Mecca until about 619 AD. They try to chase him out. And then 622 AD, he flees to Medina, which was a Jewish city. And he comes in as a Muslim refugee, the first Muslim refugee. And the Jews, there were three different Jewish tribes in their clans in Medina, and they let Muhammad in. He presents his faith to them, but they reject it. They say, you're not a prophet in the line of our Jewish prophets. He goes into the minority neighborhoods, and he begins to organize a following. We're familiar with the term community organizer. When his following gets big enough, he goes to the Jewish tribes, and he demands that they accommodate him and his new followers politically, and sort of, you know, mutual defense treaty, and will help to defend. And but it's a toleration of them. And so now Muhammad's officially a political leader. And then when Muhammad's followers back in Mecca get confrontational and argumentative, they get chased out of town. Now you have a large group of Muslim refugees. They come to Medina, and the Jews are nice and let them in as Muslim immigrants. And they go into the neighborhood where Muhammad is. And Muhammad gets verses from his Allah, allowing him to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing them out of town. So where Jesus said, if they take your coat, give them your shirt, Muhammad was, if they take your house, you take their caravan. And so he gets these verses. One of them says that a fifth of the booty belongs to Allah and his messenger. So Muhammad got a fifth of the booty from robbing caravans. Another verse said, Allah has given you the slave girls as your booty. So you would rob a caravan, you would get stuff, but then you would, what do you do with the captives? And you would sell them. And so then the people of Mecca got tired of their caravans being robbed. They send an army of 10,000. And Muhammad had a brilliant military strategy. He dug trenches all around the city of Medina, which rendered the superior cavalry of the Meccans useless. You can't charge your horses and camels across a field in a battle when there's potholes and trenches. All break their legs. So it throws off the battle strategy. Muhammad goes to some of the Meccans at night and bribes them. They slip away. He goes to some of the other ones at night and threatens them, and they slip away. And then it gets freezing cold for a week, and the rest of them slip away. And Muhammad considers this a great victory, goes back into the town, and, you know, gets offended at one of the tribes, confiscates their property, chases them out, gets offended at the second tribe, confiscates their property, chases them out. Third tribe, he surrounds them, they surrender, and he beheads them. So within 5 years of Muhammad coming as an immigrant into the Jewish city, there's not a Jew left in the city. And so this two-step strategy, the Meccan strategy, the Medina strategy, there's two sets of verses in the Quran. And the first city he was at, the verses he got are more religious. And in Medina, the verses are more political and militant. And the later verses supersede the earlier verses. They abrogate them. So the in the Bible, we have an Old Testament and a New Testament. Old Testament has some violence in it, Moses and Joshua wiping out tribes and David. And then in the New Testament, Jesus and the apostles never killed anybody. And so we say the later example is the one we're going to try to follow. Same way in Islam, only in reverse. Their peaceful verses came first when Muhammad was in Mecca, and they're superseded by the political and militant verses in Medina. And the last example is considered the more accurate for faithful Muslims to imitate. So in 1928, the Muslim Brotherhood was started by Albani and six employees of the British-run Suez Canal Company. And they use those two cities as the Muslim Brotherhood strategy. The first strategy is the religious strategy. You go into a country as a religious refugee. And then you, when the signal is given, you switch to a political and militant Muslim and you commit assassinations. And so they had assassination attempts on Ataturk in Turkey. Why? Because he was being pro-West. They had assassinated Abdullah, king of Jordan. Why? Because he was not, he was being nice to the Jews. And then they, Anwar Sadat had a treaty with the Jews, Menachem Begin. Both Anwar Sadat of Egypt and Menachem Begin of Israel got the Nobel Peace Prize. And Anwar Sadat was praised by Billy Graham, by Pat Robertson. He's over in America giving speeches. Everybody's loving him because here, this Egyptian leader, and Egypt was one of the most prosperous Muslim countries. They were all thrilled that finally there's going to be peace between the Arabs and Israel. And so there's a parade in Egypt, and the military is marching past the bandstands, and the Muslim Brotherhood, who had infiltrated the Egyptian military, they suddenly stopped the parade right in front of the bandstands, and they all turn, lower their machine guns, and spray it with bullets and kill Anwar Sadat. Right. And they wound Mubarak, and he survives, and he later becomes the president. And when Obama became president, he was going to go over to Egypt, which he did, and he disinvites Mubarak, and he fills all the seats with Muslim Brotherhood people and ushers in the Arab Spring. And so this two-step strategy, a lot of immigrants coming across the border from Mexico and even from Canada, they are from fundamentalist Muslim countries. There's no vetting going on. I spoke in Tyler, Texas last week, and Grassroots America event, and the lady that helped put it on, she was explaining that when you get a driver's license, you automatically get registered to vote. She says there's a little box that you check for citizen. And she said, I have asked everybody in the Texas government, does anybody check to make sure the person that checks that they're a citizen actually are a citizen? And she said, I've been asking everybody, and there's nobody that checks that box. Nobody in the government. She said, it's just a flat out honor system. So here you have all these illegals coming over, getting their driver's license. They can check the citizen box. They get their driver's license. They're listed as a citizen and they can vote. And then, of course, at the polling place, nobody asks the question, are you a citizen? That question is not asked. So if they go in, they pull out a driver's license, they identify themselves, they can vote. And so Obama and Homeland Security and Mayorkas is intentionally letting this happen by the millions, partly because they want to increase the Democrat voter base, but they're also letting in lots of people from hundreds of other countries, many being hostile to the United States. A large amount of Chinese young men of military age with suitcases coming across, and our government is busing them and flying them to cities all across the country, small towns even. I was in one small town, and the pastor points out the motel. He says every room in that motel has been booked by the federal government to put in illegals. They have no jobs. They just wander the streets. Crime goes up. And then Catholic charities and Lutheran charities come in and sign them up for welfare programs. So they're a permanent liability for the community, having to pay for it. One town I went to through in Minnesota, the whole entire downtown streets was Muslim men smoking cigarettes and Muslim women wearing their burqas, walking across the streets. You would have thought that you were in a foreign country. And then the liberals in the town say that you're a hateful person if you don't like this. And so they shame anybody that's concerned into being silent. And then they put their kids in the public schools, and they say that Christians can separate church and state, but we can't. So if we're coming into the school, you have to accommodate us or you're hateful. So we wear the burkas, we have our prayer rooms, we have our five times a call to prayer. And you're hateful even by having Saturday and Sunday off, because Friday is the Muslim weekend. And you have Easter and Christmas off, and that's insulting to us Muslims. And so you're being hateful and you don't even know it. So you have to unlearn everything that you've learned and realize that you're inherently bad. And we get to come in, and you have to roll out the red carpet for us. And they're buying it and they're doing it. And it's and so this strategy of coming in under the Meccan phase as just a religious refugee, and then wondering if there's going to be the signal to switch to the Medina phase and have violence all across the country. And if there is, there'll be a cry for the federal government to come in with their woke army and do martial law, and maybe right before the election. And how are you going to have voting in the midst of all that? So that's one of the concerns that numerous people have. Because you have a whole track record of the Muslim Brotherhood doing this in all the countries in the Middle East. After World War I and World War II, many countries in the Middle East wanted to be more westernized. And the Muslim Brotherhood would infiltrate and do assassinations. So anyway.
Well, Bill, going back to these notices on the front door of the Catholic Church. Catholic Church has a hierarchy, a chain of command, divided up into dioceses. And each diocese has, is it an archbishop is in charge of a diocese? Is that accurate?
Yes.
Okay. With this chain of command and this hierarchy, would it be an accurate assumption that the archbishop would be the one that gives the authority for these social events to take place between the Muslims and the Christians, as opposed to the local parish priest?
Yeah, the parishes do have some autonomy, but it has to line up with what the archbishop is in favor of, and then of course the Pope. And right. Underneath the current Pope, you've seen a purging of pro-life priests. Father Frank.
I wasn't aware of that. When you say purging, they're being ordered to retire?
Yeah, well, Father Frank Pavone is a priest. He was founded Priests for Life. And Pope Francis personally, specifically defrocked Father Frank Pavone.
Really?
And then you have the Bishop Strickland, or a Father Strickland in Texas, and he is very pro-life, and he was demoted. And there's Cardinal Raymond Burke, very conservative. He gets sidelined. Meanwhile, they're promoting pro-homosexual bishops and archbishops. So there's even a movement inside of the Catholic Church. I was listening to a podcast somebody forwarded me, and it was a Catholic podcast. And they said that for generations, Protestants have been saying that the Pope's the Antichrist. He said, for the first time, I think maybe they're right. And this was a conservative Catholic podcast. So the infiltration is a real thing, the coming in of these immigrants, and based again on these two cities Muhammad lived in, Mecca and Medina. Mecca, he was a religious leader. In Medina, he transitions to a political and a military leader. And now I will say that the majority of Muslims just want to live their lives and have their families, and they're happy to have you as a friend or a neighbor. What happens is when the non-Muslim world shows itself weak and the fundamentalist Muslims show themselves strong, the moderate Muslim is between a rock and a hard place, because if they they basically don't want to get killed by the fundamental ones. And so people say, why don't the moderate ones stand up? It's like, well, if they do, they'll get killed unless the non-Muslim world is willing to show itself strong in defending them. Very much like if a gang starts to take over a neighborhood and the people in the neighborhood will call the police and the police don't show up. Worse yet, the gang shows up and says, we have a snitch on the inside of the police department, and they said, right, you called on us, and if you do it again, we'll kill you.
Right, right.
Is that person going to call the police?
That's some pretty serious threats there, real, backed up by real action. We have our last break. We'll be right back.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read one. This product has been a godsend for my father, who suffered from a heart attack about 2 years ago. He was prescribed medications for his condition, which was so serious, he almost died. But he hasn't been able to afford most of the medications. After researching alternatives that were more affordable, he tried Extendivite. Since taking it, he has consistently lower blood pressure and experiences less angina. We are currently on our fifth bottle. I enthusiastically recommend this product, and I am grateful that it is available. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Health Simple with Colorado Shilajit, Fact Bit number 2. In Ayurvedic pharmacology, Shilajit is the king, Raja Yoga Vahayana. Raja Yana is one of the comprehensive disciplines of Ayurveda. It comprises of specialized uses of herbal minerals to achieve the optimum state of health. Raja Yana is a path to achieve homeostasis and thus retarding the process of aging and the prevention of diseases. Shilajit stands alone as the king herbal mineral over all other earth-made substances. Within Raja Yana, Shilajit is the ultimate substance that improves quality of plasma and blood. Thus, it strengthens and promotes health to all tissues of the body. Legit Shilajit, like Colorado Shilajit, is as the literal Sanskrit translation implies. Shilajit is the conqueror of mountains and the destroyer of weakness.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's G-O-R-B-N.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Company will fix bayonets! Fix! Bayonets! Attention!
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. Well, Bill, we've covered a lot of territory, as I knew we would. And I want to get your summary of your thoughts for our listeners as to how they can understand Islam and what they can be doing in their communities to counter this, what I consider an invasion, sir.
Well, I would not surrender the Judeo-Christian beliefs that our country was founded upon. I recently did a 90-minute presentation at Regent University for Michelle Bachmann. And she, as a congresswoman, had gone over to the Middle East numerous times, met with the prince of, king of Saudi Arabia, and met with Netanyahu, and I was with Louis Gohmert, congressman, and he had been over there. And Michelle was saying, the people in America don't understand. So she got a call saying, hey, can we have one of these kumbaya, things, and we can have a priest and an imam. And she said, I've been through this for 20 years. All you want to do is anesthetize the West so that you can come in and set up your sleeper cells, basically. And so that's when she called me to go ahead and give the history. So they have a strategy. And it is taking advantage of the West's lack of history. People forget Egypt had been Christian for six centuries, evangelized right. by Mark that wrote the gospel, Matthew, right. Mark, Luke, and John. And then the Byzantine Christians were persecuting the Coptic Christians. And when the Muslims come to the gates of Egypt, right, the borders, the Coptics let them in to help drive out the Byzantine Christians. Well, then the Muslims decide to stay, and they took over town after town, and they even cut out the tongues of anybody caught speaking the Coptic language, and they said Arabic was the holy language. One meeting they had in a church, and the Muslims surrounded the church and burnt all the church leaders. And then Syria was completely Christian for six centuries, evangelized by Paul that wrote the gospel. That wrote the letters in the New Testament. And then Caliph Umar conquers it. And then there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa, Morocco, Algiers, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt. All right, it was all Christian. St. Augustine of Hippo was from Carthage. Today, that's Tunisia. And then in the year 711, you had a Muslim leader named Tariq, and he landed on the coast of Spain where there's a mountain, and the Arabic word for mountain is Jabal. So they called it Jabal Tariq or Gibraltar.
Really?
And the year 711, 80,000 Muslims invade Spain, and they have their Arabian horses, stirrups, and scimitar swords. The Europeans are still fighting on foot. And Spain was a bunch of kingdoms, and they all fought each other, and the Muslims took advantage of the disagreements. So they would conquer one little kingdom, and the other ones would be like, well, I never really liked that kingdom. And then they conquer another one, and they're like, well, they were always a competitor to me. And then they conquer another one, well, I'll keep my head low, maybe they'll, right? And then they would say, okay, well, we demand tribute if you don't want us to. But they ended up taking over all of Spain.
Amazing. Bill, thank you. We appreciate it. We look forward to having you back next Wednesday, sir.
Thanks.
Okay. Top of the hour break. We're back with Professor McKenna. Stay tuned.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.